I wasn't going to mention it because I have a whole thing planned, but yesterday we had a new member class. There were 9 people. Several of them came back today, so that went well. Yes. And, you know, they're here because some part of our community and teaching, and they all mentioned the music as well, speaks to them and growing spiritually and knowing that we are expressions of the one source of life and calling upon that and learning to live into that more fully speaks to them. And they all shared some difficulty, right? So there were several, one person's just lost their spouse like 6 months ago, didn't even know that. And they all just leaned in and offered each other presence and compassion, which fits so nicely because how many of you feel like you're pretty good at doing that for others, and then when it comes to you, here comes the battery of criticism, or you know, you shouldn't need support, or you shouldn't be feeling bad, or it's so interesting. And so we're going to explore that a little bit today. I myself have recently experienced an opening to the realization of how critical I can be to myself. And it really was working with a spiritual counselor who showed me and demonstrated such compassion when I was hurting and talked back to, do you hear what you're saying to yourself? Gosh, let's give yourself some space and some grace and some kindness. And so his demonstration of that for me allowed me to move through something that was very difficult and to begin to open up to myself in that way. And I started reading this book. I'm not going to make you read it. Self-Compassion by Dr. Kirsten Neff, The Proven Power of Being Kind to Yourself. And so I think, you know, on a spiritual level, don't we feel like God is a compassionate presence? God is, I mean, we teach that God is the energy and essence of love itself, and compassion is an expression of love, right? And we are, at our core, an expression of that energy, of that life. And yet, in our very human experience, when we have challenges, even just, you know, failures, right? Just, man, I wish I had done that differently. It's just a bam, bam, bam. Instead of, wow, that's hard to feel that failure and acknowledge what you'd hoped for, right? The disappointment and all of that. And so, in a way, like science is now showing how when we do offer ourselves self-compassion, how that benefits us. And that's what we'll talk a little bit about today. Of course, our teacher and our greatest demonstration of compassion was Jesus, who never turned anyone away, never criticized. In fact, he was often with those who had been ostracized and left out, pushed out. He spent time with them. He befriended them. He healed the sick, right? He fed the hungry. So he very much addressed the human needs and then continued to teach about the reign and realm of the divine and the power of that we all have access to. In fact, you know, he moved us from the whole list of commandments of all the things we shouldn't do to 2 or 3 simple things that we should do, which all involve love. Love your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. In that, there was greater hope, greater possibility for life in his teaching. Implicit in that commandment of loving your neighbors as yourself is the assumption that we love ourselves. Some of us wouldn't do to our neighbors what we put ourselves through, yes? Unless that one neighbor. Just kidding. There's always one. Father Richard Rohr concludes that reading by saying that we are supposed to be kind and gentle, caring and nurturing, empowering and forgiving of ourselves. If we are unable to do this, ultimately we may be unable to do it for our neighbors. And if we cannot love our neighbors whom we can see, how can we love God whom we cannot see? Self-compassion then is not indulgence, but a necessity. And Kristen Neff herself says, you know, we're all entitled to compassion and love just by the nature of being human beings and being here. We don't have to earn it. Nobody gets more. Some people get less. Compassion is a key element of navigating life in a healthy and productive way. And it's supportive. All the major faith traditions have some variation of the golden rule, right? Treat others as you would treat yourself. Do unto others as you would do unto yourself. But we don't do that, hopefully. Again, we're often harder on ourselves than others. So I'm intrigued by Dr. Kristen Neff because she was the pioneer. She's a professor of human development at the University of Austin, and she pioneered the first deep study of self-compassion, what it is, how it works, and what are the blocks to it. And her work has uncovered a path that we can transform from being our worst enemy to our best ally, inner ally, which I love. And of course, if we go back to that as a spiritual principle, that God is love and we are God in expression, then this turning on ourselves, we must address it, right? And it leads to ultimately us turning on each other as well. So what is compassion? Compassion literally means to suffer with. Not to, as more empathetically, take on that pain and feel that pain, but to recognize someone is suffering, to be present to that suffering, and to offer maybe something or some, at least some kind words, something towards alleviating the suffering, right? And having compassion is really no different. Having self-compassion is no different. How can I support myself, be gentle with myself through this, whatever the difficulty may be? Offer myself some genuine support. Dr. Neff offers these key understandings about how compassion works. We can think about how they work when we express them to others, and again, just doing the same for ourselves. First, to have compassion for others, you have to be willing to see their suffering. You have to be, you know, many times we're pulled to look away from the person experiencing homelessness, right? Or someone in a difficult situation because it's difficult. We look away. So self-compassion begins by saying, I'm willing to see that you're suffering. I'm willing to stay in that. And that is true for ourselves too, to acknowledge our suffering even when we don't want to, which is often the case. And second, compassion involves feeling moved by others' suffering so that our heart responds to their pain. And when this occurs, we feel a warmth and a caring and the desire to help the suffering person in some way. Having compassion also means that you offer understanding and kindness to others when they fail or make mistakes, rather than judging them harshly. And finally, when you feel compassion for another rather than mere pity, it means that you realize that suffering, failure, and imperfection is part of the shared human experience. And I think that's the key to get us in there. We're not alone in this. And when it's us, we feel like we're the one that just isn't right somehow, right? We've missed something. Everybody else knows what to do and we don't. It's not true. So self-compassion involves acting the same way towards yourself in a difficult time, when you fail, when you're experiencing a loss. Instead of mercilessly judging and criticizing yourself for various inadequacies or shortcomings, self-compassion means you are kind and understanding when confronted with those. And of course, then the payoff is you're more likely to address those. because you're not getting beat over the head by yourself when you say, "Oh, look at that, I made a mistake. Look at that, I'm struggling." And that's part of growth. That's part of development, right? So she does a great job of explaining. Why do you think, just if you experience for yourself, it's harder for you to offer that to yourself than others? Can you get a sense of why that might be? Just shout it out, if you're daring.
I think your crying is bigger than others.
Ah.
Self-centered.
Trained. Yeah, we really are in this culture trained much more towards helping others, being supportive of others, not so much ourselves. It does come back to being self-centered. Yeah. So she says this, and I'm just going to go through these quickly because I think it's really helpful to understand, in so many things, we may not do something or that's actually helpful for us because we misunderstand what it even is, right? And so these misconceptions, we are a little bit like, that's not, like, people are actually suspicious of too much self-kindness and compassion. Interesting, yes? Yeah? So I'm going to share these with you. She says that Western culture does not promote self-compassion as a virtue. In fact, traditionally, many people harbor deep suspicion about being too kind to themselves. Our attitudes are often shaped by others, our society at large. And so awareness of that, as we've been talking about ad nauseum, awareness is key if we're going to change that, right, or dismantle some of that. And so I encourage you, as you hear these, to consider your own misgivings about self-compassion, what might stand in your way to offer yourself more kindness and support in times of challenge. She says the misgivings about self-compassion are usually misconceptions. Number one, self-compassion is not self-pity. It's actually the antidote of self-pity. Self-pity says, poor me. Self-compassion acknowledges that life presents challenges and hardships for everyone. We're not unique in that. Self-compassion, number two, is for wimps. Tough and strong is better. Now there is something, there's the yin and the yang of compassion. I'm not gonna get into that today, but there is kind of a fierce side of compassion where you actually set some boundaries and do some things quite outwardly to take good care of yourself. She says actually that self-compassion is for wimps, tough and strong is better. Research shows the opposite, that self-compassionate people are better able to cope with tough situations. They're better equipped at getting through divorce, chronic pain, dealing with trauma. Number three, being self-compassionate is too selfish. Actually giving compassion to ourselves. And so she's done a lot of research to see how people that offer this to themselves fare. And she has found that actually giving compassion to ourselves enables us to give more to others in relationships and tend to be more compassionate and forgiving of others. So it doesn't result in a selfish result. I know that's redundant, but you get what I'm saying. It's actually taking care of yourself in a way that actually then you can do that better for others. Self-compassion will make me lazy and self-indulgent. That's not what does it. Opposite is true. She's found that compassion inclines us towards long-term health and well-being. We're motivated to take good care of ourselves. Self-compassion is really a form of making excuses for bad behavior. In reality, self-compassion provides the safety needed to admit mistakes rather than needing to blame others for them. These people take greater personal responsibility and are more likely to apologize. The number one reason, you ready? Drum roll. I can make anything fun. The number one block to self-compassion is the fear of, if I let go of my harsh self-criticism, I'll never get where I want to go. In other words, self-compassion might undermine our motivation to achieve. Most people think that self-criticism is an effective motivator. It is not. It actually tends to undermine self-confidence and leads to a deepened fear of failure. So it just perpetuates this cycle. So in a nutshell, research shows that self-compassionate people have high personal standards. They just don't beat themselves up when they fail. And in turn, they are less afraid of failure and more likely to try again after failing. And we all experience a sense of failure, right? Okay, that was good. I did that pretty quickly. I'm gonna take a breath. So if we consider then compassion, including self-compassion, as a natural function of love, from a spiritual standpoint, I love this notion that Richard Rohr put forward, that we can think of the reign of God that Jesus spoke of as the great compassionate presence. The great compassionate presence, the presence of divine love in and through all things is the conclusion, is the, here's where I miss a word. Is how we can experience more life, more love, more compassion as we connect with that presence and power that is God, that we think of God as being, and we are directly expressions of it. So we can call upon that presence and support to support us in our suffering and to sort of illuminate our ability to do that and offer that for ourselves as we do for others. Showing our self-love and understanding and compassion in times of difficulty or seeming failure then is how divine compassion gets expressed. It's not just something out there that some being may or may not offer some of us. We are the ones that offer it into this experience. There's another important distinction that you may find helpful, that self-compassion is not the same as self-esteem either. And this is very interesting. She says that in Western culture, high self-esteem requires standing out in a crowd, being special and above average. The problem with that is it's impossible for everyone to be above average at the same time. The desire to see ourselves as better than average and to keep that elusive feeling of high self-esteem can actually lead to cruel behaviors toward other people. Teen bullying is a great example of this. Prejudice that fuels all of the isms, whereby we cast others aside out of the circle in order to somehow feel better about ourselves. The ego's attempt at maintaining superiority and worth is behind self-esteem. While self-esteem offers a positive evaluation of self-worth, it requires that we feel better than ourselves, than others. And it is a fair-weathered friend, only there when we succeed and not there when we need it the most. Self-esteem is linked to more social comparisons and narcissism, which ultimately blocks the expression of compassion for others. So in comparison then, self-compassion is not self-esteem. Compassion, including self-compassion, is the natural function of love. It is not a judgment or a comparison at all. It's calling forth the love that we are and the love that we deserve and the love that we can freely then give to others. It acknowledges that we are all imperfect as a result of the human condition. And so it is always there. Love is always there. We don't have to be perfect. And it is less contingent upon conditions, physical attractiveness, or performance. It provides a more stable sense of self-worth over time. So I thought that was interesting. to make that distinction. We're not talking about those sort of more superficial comparisons that make us feel better for a time, right? And then we get gray hair, and then that starts to be a problem. We're not identifying our worth and our value in comparison to any standards or to each other. And so, as I said, this work offers the opportunity through growing our self-compassion, we can become that inner ally instead of our inner enemy. And I thought of that teaching of Jesus, a deeper level where he says, you know, you've heard it said that you should persecute your enemies, right? Hate your enemies. But I say, you should love those who persecute you. You should pray for your enemies. That is our opening to the power and the presence of divine love to work through us when we are our own worst enemy, when we are persecuting ourselves. Help me to be compassionate with myself, to hold myself as an imperfect human, and love me through me. It's so sweet, and it's that opening that we can take time in prayer to be open, to call upon that great compassionate presence to move through us, to heal that within us that would cause us to think perhaps we don't deserve it, or we're not worthy, or our crime is too huge. And so we'll take some time now to do that in the time of prayer and meditation, to contemplate for ourselves our own relationship with the divine presence of compassion and letting that have its way through us. And Kath will open us with this sweet song, "I Will Be Gentle With Myself."
So I invite you this time around to just soak it all in, and then after meditation, we'll sing it together. I will be gentle with myself. I will be gentle with myself. And I will hold myself like a newborn baby child. And I will only go as fast as the slowest part of me feels safe to go. And I will only go as fast as the slowest part of me feels safe to go. I will be gentle with myself. I will be gentle with myself, and I will hold myself like a newborn baby child.
Feeling the seat supporting you, the ground beneath your feet. Breathing into the fullness of your heart space. Such a sweet image, right? That we offer such love and care and compassion to the newborn child that is in complete need of us. And there is that aspect of ourselves that is true for as well. And so we just breathe into the fullness of divine love and locate it at the center of our very being. The And right here, right now, we are an expression of that love, of that life. And there is nothing that we can do or not do that changes that. So we can relax in that knowing. Let our breath guide us to our heart. And find a way to connect for yourself in a focused way on this idea of the great compassionate presence. That is living in and through and as each one of us and is imbued in all of creation. So we connect with that now. And if we notice some sense of blocking to our ability to do that, we just let it be. Knowing its presence, claiming its presence, may it be known to us as we are able to receive it. As we connect with the spiritual truth that each one of us is made in the image and likeness of the divine. And so we have the capacity to both receive and express this divine compassion. And so we just realize, we take a moment in the silence to realize that at the depth of our being. This life, this love that is living through me, loves me and loves through me. May I feel the strength of that and the support of that in this moment. And while we may be working on things to improve ourselves in some way, which is always great, there's nothing we have to do to earn this love and this compassion. It is ours for the taking and the giving. And so for our ability to conceive of this and to connect with this and to open up to the fullness of this love and life living through us, we're grateful. Grateful for the opportunity to start where we are and be expanded from there. And so may we move forward this day more gently with ourselves and with all those who we meet along the way, knowing that this is not selfish, that this is empowering. And practically, we pay attention to our thoughts and our words, the quality of those that we hold when we're thinking of ourselves and speaking to ourselves. I will be gentle with myself. Thank you for tuning in today. We hope that you found something meaningful in our service. If you'd like to learn more about us or make a donation in support of what we do here, visit unitydenver.org. Our Sunday service is at 10 a.m. every Sunday. We hope to see you sometime in person.